It goes on the internet, on the website.
Oh, okay.
Sunday Nighter.
My name's John. My name's Jeff. I am an alcoholic. Yeah, it's funny. When I got the call, when somebody asked me to share from my home group tonight, it's the only call I had all day on my cell phone. It was a beautiful day. Went to MDG Addington meeting this morning and played baseball. Went for breakfast with a bunch of members, and tonight I had plans. And the one time the phone rang, it was a member from my home group, so I answered it, and I didn't think it was going to be to share. And she said, "Can you share tonight at Sunday Nighters?" Right away, the old behavior in me, you know, jumped into play, you know, selfish, self-centered. No, I don't feel like going. I said, "I'll call you back in a couple of minutes." But AA is part of my life, and I have been taught when you're asked to do something for this program, you do it. But I played through all scenarios in my head for a couple of minutes, and then I just, I won't use the language, but I said, I guess I'll share, So I called back because I didn't feel going to a baseball game was a good enough excuse not to come and do service. So it's good to be here. Because of this program, I have a totally different life today. It's funny, when I rushed through supper, I rushed home to shower and shave and to get here for, I like usually getting to a meeting half an hour beforehand. But anyway, to make a long story short, I get little signs a lot in my life, if I'm receptive to them, about how I've changed in this program. I get home, and this year I decided to spoil myself, and I bought a new, my brother-in-law works at GE, so I bought his, my fridge was like 10 years old, so I said, I travel a lot, so I want to get a new fridge. The old one was leaking water. So I buy this GE, it's the biggest they have, 22.5 cubic, the bottom freezer and the whole nine yards. When they delivered it, the thing was so massive I could sleep in it, And being a true alcoholic, now I got to fill it up to the rim, right? It's there, I got to fill it up. So anyway, I fill it all up. So I come home today and I go to check something and everything's defrosting. The exact reason why I bought this fridge, to not have this problem happen. So it's 7:15, I haven't showered, I got all my food going waste. And, but here's how I've changed, because the old me, I would have called my brother-in-law up in Toronto like it's his fault, threatened him to get his ass in the car and come down and fix my fridge. Or I'm being deadly serious, unfortunately. This is the way I was. I would have been pissed off at the world. Why me? Instead, I just said, okay, let's hope my landlord's not up north. I called him. He had an apartment building on the same level as me. The fridge was worked, so he rushed over. We transferred everything. And it was a smaller fridge, so I'm taking from this, and we're tuck taping the doors, and I'm looking at my watch. Fuck. But the difference is, I'm grateful that I have that much food, I have to tuck tape another fridge. That's the way I look at things most of the time if I'm spiritually fit. So anyway, so I got here in time, and that's just another little, I was laughing on the way here, how it's, hey, it's still under warranty, I'll make the call tomorrow, it's all good, Trust me, that would have been a reason to drink and use for at least a month. Then again, if I was still drinking and using, I wouldn't have that fridge in my apartment to begin with, Anyway, so, basically, I'm here to share with you my story, what it was like, how I got into this program that I wanted nothing to do with when I first came in, and where I am today. I'm 42 years old. I hit 2 years sobriety Thursday that just passed, July 21st. I've not slipped, and life is good today, but it always wasn't that way. I was adopted at a very young age, at 19 days, so as far as I'm concerned, they're my family. They were a non-alcoholic family. My dad would, drink a case of 12 Labatt's 50 would last, a month. Unless his brother came over, my uncle, and then maybe it would last 2 weeks. But my mother, I think I saw her drink twice. Once when she fell down a flight of stairs, she had a shot of brandy. And once in a blue moon, she'd have Manischewitz wine, which I never understood because we're not Jewish. But that's the only time I saw her drink, My two sisters didn't drink. A glass of wine here and there, and then there was me. I don't have a tale. A lot of times I hear people share, and I hear about how they had a hard upbringing and, some really sad tales, abuse, etc., and I never had that. And when I first came into the rooms, I used to really get upset at myself that I chose the path I did, because in the beginning I didn't believe that it was a disease. I believed that I made these choices, And I'd hear some of the tales up here and go, well, no kidding, they drank, you know, so would I. And then I'd look at my life, how I basically, you know, I went through high school, I had a very good life, you know, I never had a problem with women, I was not a shy guy, I always had part-time jobs, I always had money, my family took very good care of me, I wanted to go to scouts, I went to scouts, hockey, I played hockey, I wanted to go to camp, I went to camp, maybe I had things too good, I don't know, but... For me to have ended up in church basements at 40 years of age had nothing to do with my family. Before I started getting healthier one day at a time, of course I blame my family for a lot of things, but I see today that I brought on a lot of my own misery. So basically I had my first drink when I was 13 years old. I remember it vividly. It was a Labatt 50, stole it from my father. And it's just amazing how my first drink had to do with stealing. You know, the two went hand in hand for me. And I remember it was a warm beer because he used to stash it under the stairs. And I remember I had it with my next door neighbor in a cabane, those metal cabanes. And I hear a lot of people when they share that their first drink, they loved it. I hated it. What I did like was the fact that I was breaking the rules. I liked the fact that I was getting away with something. And I remember too, it was the can with the old tabs, you know, that rip off. And of course I cut my hand. So right away, stealing and lying were involved with my first drink, you know, because I had to lie to my mother how I cut myself, you know. I only see all these things today. Back then, you know, it was poor me. But so I went through high school, and I always hung around with what I thought back then was the in crowd. You know, we had long hair back then, the marijuana t-shirts, Led Zeppelin, Swan Song, the jean jackets. We weren't bullies. We did, you know, about 10 of us definitely had control of the school. We had about 2,500 students. Grade 10 and 11, we had control of the marijuana trade at our school. There wasn't the drugs there is today in the school system. So basically, at a young age, I started hanging out with what I thought was the in crowd, which I realized today was the wrong crowd. So, you know, started drinking a little more in grade 10 and 11, you know, at the parties, on weekends, dances, you know, smuggling in the Mickeys and... always a rebel, always, you know, one foot on each side of the line of life, you know, not sure where I belonged or where I wanted to be. So I went through high school. Then right out of high school, my parents begged me to go to CGEP. You know, they pay for everything. They wanted me to go to McGill, all these nice things like my sisters did. So I went to Dawson Selby for one semester, and after they saw my marks, they basically said, get a job or get out. And I was always smart, I just was lazy, you know. I remember there's two lines that really struck me when I came in here is, rarely have those failed who follow in our footsteps, and half measures avail us nothing. I always took the easy way out. I always did half measures. Always, always, always. So, bottom line, then, for an alcoholic in the making, I got a dream job. I worked at Carling O'Keefe Breweries for 11 years. That's where my alcohol intake really took off. I was on the beer trucks, and I remember we used to start our day at 7 o'clock. We'd finish at 11 in a strip joint, and we'd drink for free till 4, paid till 4, and go home. And I did this for a lot of years, a lot of years. I was also sometimes a part-time sales rep for summer when guys were on vacation. They gave me Crescent Street, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, 12-hour shifts. Which they would just give me $1,000 and $100 bills, and I'd go down to Crest and I'd see people drinking the competition. I'd try them to get them to drink my beer. And I focused on the women. I got a lot of women to drink Black Label. And, you know, back then we were doing a big pitch, the bottle had changed, and they were doing the black and white commercials. And so it was working. I was really getting a lot of people to drink my product. But at the same time, I got introduced to a little white powder to help me get through my 12-hour shifts. I'm in an AA meeting, but drugs is a part of my story. Cocaine is what brought me to my knees. But I'll leave it at that. I got into cocaine working on Crescent Street. So the company started hearing rumors that their rep was doing a lot of cocaine and drinking, and you know, but they looked the other way because the sales were increasing. And it's all about bottom line, right? So, but they kept calling me in, and one day they said, look, if we hear one more word, you're going to lose your job. And of course, me, you know, it's not going to happen to me, right? Do they know who I am? Anyway, one day it happened. They couldn't fire me because I was unionized, but they just basically, they put me inside, which was the ultimate punishment for a person like me. I became part of what they call the cleaning gang. which we worked from 11 at night till 7 in the morning. We were paid from 11 at night till 7 in the morning. We used to work 2 hours in the beginning of our shift, 2 hours at the end of the shift. The other 4 hours we'd be, I went to every jazz festival, fireworks on the roof, and just drinking, and other things, but mainly a lot of drinking. I mean, there's nothing like a cold beer right out of the filler, man, trust me, when it's a summer day. So throughout this time, my drinking is getting out of control, my drug use is getting out of control, my lying, manipulation, risk-taking. I don't think I'm out of control, but I look back now and I was out of control. Then I guess in 1991, I decided to, they merged, the merger happened with Molson. So they offered me a position, something I didn't want to do, working inside the rest of my life. So I quit, I took a package and I left. And I got into sales. I've always been in sales, so I started selling plastic bags and drinking. Meanwhile, my drug intake is going through the roof, so I have to figure out a plan how I can support my two habits. So I get involved with organized crime. I was part of a major criminal organization for 10 years, but for the grace of God, I didn't think that when I came in here. I never got arrested. I buried a lot of friends. I got a lot of friends that are doing 20 years to life. I get through the states in 6 seconds, and I'm not even Catholic, I do the cross. I'm just, when I think of the chances I took for because I was an addict and an alcoholic out of control, it just blows me away how, I've never lost my license. I've been pulled over 3 times by the police and they followed me home, they gave me a break. That doesn't happen to a lot of people, when I hear them share. But I didn't take any of that as signs, I didn't take that as warnings. I felt that the world owed me this, So now I'm basically working very, very little with my own little company, and I'm hanging around with the big boys, what I thought. Meanwhile, my lying manipulation is getting out of control. My mother's asking me questions, and, meanwhile, I look back at it now, and when I think of the money I used to make, and, I had to move back home. I'm 33, 34 years old, I had to move back home, and I'm making $60,000, $70,000 a year, and I got to live at home. Always lying and just, oh my God, the chaos. Then I got a phone call one day from this woman that I used to date when I was working in the breweries to let me know that I had 2 children with her. I always had my doubts, but until she came out and said they're your kids, it was like just another thing I've learned today that I have a whole train of wreckage that I carry around. And this is just one of the things that I just kept on the back of the train and kept drinking to forget about it, So they said basically that the father found out, the guy who thought he was the father found out he's not the father, I'm the father, now they need a father. So I'm just sitting there going, whoa, wait a minute, instant father, just add water, And the insanity, and remember, I'm sharing here honestly, it's not easy for me to share this, but it's just to basically show you where I've come from and how much this program has saved my life. My main concern was how much is it going to cost me? Nothing else. I wish I could say other things, but I negotiated 3 months over money. And I remember doing my list of expenses. Number one on my list was drugs. Number two was alcohol. Number three was rent. Number four was cable, phone, cell bills. Kids were like number nine. And I remember when I was saying, okay, the kids, she wanted X amount a month. I didn't take off the two things. I was taking, okay, maybe I'll get a cheaper apartment. I'll change cars. Fucking insanity, man. Number one on my list was alcohol and drugs, and my kids were at the bottom, Anyway, so we finally agreed on something, and one mistake I made, though, back then is I should have had her change all the paperwork, because on the birth certificate was written father unknown, and I remember talking to my mother about that and my friends, and they all said, oh, let your kids want your name. Let them, so I got the little romantic ID, and I said, okay, fine. You'll see as I go on in my story here why that was a critical mistake that I made. Anyway, I very quickly got involved in my children's lives. My son at the time was 6. My daughter was 4. She hated my guts, still does to this day. My son, within 3 weeks, was calling me dad, and I quickly enjoyed buying them things. I quickly fell in love with my children. To know you have them, but to actually have them are 2 different things. So I never, thank God, I have a lot of guilt and shame now that I'm sober, but the one thing is I never did drugs around my kids. I was kind of very responsible where they were involved. I was very tough with my kids about education, about drugs. Every weekend I'd ask them, anyone offer you drugs? I mean, I didn't want them to be doing what I was doing. You know, I didn't play ostrich about that part of my life with them. So I'm still spinning out of control meanwhile, and slowly my son, because he's getting older, and he starts to see some of the people who I bring them to their houses, and he sees little things that are starting to make him ask questions, and I'm just constantly lying, constantly. I got to the point in my life where I would lie about stuff I didn't have to lie about. You know, what color is your shirt? Black, and it's white. You know, I mean, just don't know what right or wrong is anymore. So basically now I'm coming up to the millennium. My life is out of control. I don't think it is. I'm fighting with the mother of my children a lot about money, because now it's, I'm just so out of control with my other life that I'm not making ends meet. So again, where do I want to cut? The kids. Where do, you know, I'm telling her, well, I don't see my daughter anymore. Why am I paying for my daughter? All stuff like this, you know. So then the millennium rolls around January, and I brought in the millennium with 3 heart attacks in January 2000. And that scared me. Only for a couple of months, though. But the key for that was that it got me introduced to a place called Beaver Foster's on Cavendish. And once again, half measures, eh? I go there and they give me a choice of going to Beaver for 5 weeks, doing outpatient, intensive therapy, or once a week. So what do I take once a week, right? And I remember the girl, and boy, did I resent her. Nicole, she said, you know, because she asked all these questions, and I only was honest with half of it. And she still said, you got to go away. This, you're taking the easy way. You got to go. Oh, I was like pissed at her. Yeah, yeah. I got in my car. F you as I'm lighting up a joint, you know. So for about 3 months after the heart attacks in January, I was afraid. I stopped doing the cocaine. And then my doctor, of course, made a mistake, not knowing who he was dealing with, because I wasn't honest with him. He said, you know what, don't quit the marijuana. Don't quit drinking, because you don't want to stress out your heart. Perfect. Great doctor. You know what I mean? So every time I'm smoking a joint now and drinking, I'm saying, my doctor's ordered me to do this. You know? So then in May, I got in a big scrap with one of my suppliers. And as I told you in the beginning of my share, I was very, very, very angry, angry, angry person. Very spiteful. Hated myself big time. And so I hated everyone around me. And if it didn't go my way, look out, man. Do you know who I know, and do you know what I can do to you? One phone call, and just, well, remember, I'm not sharing any of this with pride, eh? It's just, this is my story. So in May 2000, I have another heart attack. This one, I die on the table. I was gone for 92 seconds. In case anyone's curious, I didn't see a light. I didn't see any flames, which I'm grateful for that. But I got to tell you, what I did feel was an incredible, incredible piece of serenity, that if I could bottle a hundredth of what I felt for that 92 seconds, that's the way I want to live. And I remember when they brought me back, and it's so funny, it was 10 women that were working on me that day that saved my ass. And I remember, you know, here everything was like out of the ER programs, you know, morphine, he's bottoming out, and do this, and get the paddles, and I'm sitting there going, I fucked up. You know? And I'm like a fish in the boat. I'm bouncing around. They're holding me down. I'm going, this isn't a broken ankle. Shit, what have I done? Fuck, you know? And I remember that. I remember looking at the time, and it was 10 to 2. And it's funny. Maybe some of you, I used to wonder what would be the last thing in my head. Would it be a girl, my kids, or what, you know? And it was Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, when they had the fight. And the last words I said were, no mas. No more. No more, because I remember in the Gazette, when Roberto Duran gave up the fight, in the Gazette or the Star the next day was no mas. He gave up. And that was the last thing that went through my head, was that, no mas. I couldn't take the pain anymore. So when they brought me back, I was pissed off, because where I was pretty cool. No more pain, no more heartache, no more lying, no more manipulation. And I remember one of the girls saying, I'll translate it, she said, be angry, you're too young to go. And I'm trying to talk to them. And true alcoholic, I remember they wanted to give me this big needle in my heart, and I'm stopping them. And they're removing my mask, saying, what, quack, what? And I'm going, what is that? And they give me this big, long word, and I'm there, oh, okay. You know, like, I know what that is, okay? But the true alcoholic in me is still trying to control how they're saving my life, you know? So I get out of the hospital, and I'm scared. I'm pretty scared this time. And I was like, wow, you know? But I still have not admitted I have a problem. I just think I got to curtail certain things. So I stopped seeing Nazem because I figured that was stressing me out. You know, I was opening the box of poison. That's no good for me. So I'm going through, and then, you know, we go into 2001, and I'd stopped doing the cocaine for a while, but then the insanity of my disease. One night I was sitting at home lonely. See, I get very lonely, so that's why I used to drink and do drugs. And I was sitting there lonely one night, and I said, well, wait a minute. I'm taking all these pills for my heart for the rest of my life. That'll protect me against the cocaine. So that day I went out to get more cocaine. Because I figured I'm better than the people that don't have all these medications. So, meanwhile, my life's spinning out of control, and my bottom happened almost 3 years ago when the mother of my children said, you're fucking nuts, you cannot see your kids anymore. And I had no protection in the eyes of the law because I didn't get those birth certificates changed. I went to see a lawyer who said, Jeff, it's going to cost you $40,000 for DNA for this. Plus, she's just going to say you hang around with this criminal organization. You're finished. They're going to take you, tell you to do a drug test. You're finished. But the insanity of my disease, for the 6 months, I was almost relieved. Like, wow, no more kids. No more responsibility. No more money. It's all mine now, right? So 6 months later, it hit me on a Sunday that I lost the right to see. It took 6 months for me to realize my children have chosen not to see me anymore. That's when I said, you know what, something's wrong here, man. And one thing where I think one of the reasons, because you got to want this program. I'm a big believer in wanting this program versus needing it. And that's where my head started changing. And I remember lying on the couch on that Sunday, and I think about this Sunday a lot. You know, today, like I said, I was playing baseball with a bunch of alcoholics, and we were laughing and having a great time. We kicked their ass, which is always nice. And good pitching. And but I was just, I flashed back to here I am. Like, you know, I've got a suntan today. How many Sundays like today did I waste in bed in the fetal position, shaking, going, fuck, I got to get help, I got to get help. It took 2 years of that, man. And I remember lying on the couch that fateful Sunday, and I had two options in my head. Put a bullet in my head, or go to rehab, go to Beaver, go away for 5 weeks. And I literally remember saying, and I laughed out loud, saying, well, the bullet's permanent. You know, maybe I'll try the rehab thing. You know, what can I lose? You know, because the other thing to me, once you do it, you can't change your mind. So I call up Nazim. It was the long weekend, the Queen's birthday. I call him Tuesday. I say, okay, that's it. I'm ready to go away. Shock the hell out of him. He calls me 3 days later. Okay, we're ready to take you. I'm like, whoa, not yet. Whoa, wait a minute. But I had my moment of clarity. I knew I wasn't having fun anymore. Thank God. Nothing was working. The booze, the drugs, the women, the lifestyle. It was not working anymore. I was playing with my books. I owed a lot of money to my organization, which I've been very lucky because they let me pay it back interest-free. Trust me, I should have been in a sleeping bag. But they liked me, and I did make them a lot of money over the years. But still, they should have used me to set an example. We're not supposed to do drugs when we're in that organization. So now I'm getting ready to go to Beaver, and I've got to tell my family. What do I tell my customers? You know, how do I make all this happen? So where I had a big moment in my life is I decided to tell one of my key accounts in Toronto. Had a big supper with him, and I didn't tell him about the blow. He knew I lost my kids. We'd become friends, but he's a customer. And I told him, I said, look, I have a drinking problem. I'm going to go away for 5 weeks. Do I have your support? Do I have the company's support? And this was a big moment in my life. He stood up, hugged me, said, go. You're a good man. You need help. Go. I'm proud of you. That gave me the strength. Because if he would have said, well, I don't know, and this and that, and fuck, I was still looking for reasons not to go, right? So from there, my mom lives in Toronto. I left that meeting. I went to tell my mom I was going away. And I was so shocked. Everyone said, go. I thought they'd say, oh, you don't need it. They're all saying, like, go. Okay, well, go, how much, you know? So, you know, my mom right away, go. My sister, go. Everyone, go. And I'm like, fuck, maybe I should go, you know? So I get to Beaver, and it's the most humiliating, brutal experience of my life. They check my bag, they check me, and I get upstairs to this little room and a plastic bed and plastic pillows. And, you know, and I've got to remember when I came into, I came from an organization where we're better than everybody, and I get the Beaver, and I'm like, I'm not no heroin junkie. I don't steal from my family. And so what? I've screwed the government for 10 years and done God knows what that I'm not going to share here in case there's a Crown prosecutor. But I'm still thinking I'm better than everybody, you know. And I remember my buddy that drove me there, like I was stressed big time, man. It's so ironic how to get there. We go right by my kid's place almost. And I remember I just looked out the window and I had a tear down my eye and I'm like, Daddy's going to get better, you know. And I remember we pull up and some, you know, Beaver, there's the funeral place there, the cemetery, and there's Beaver House. And my buddy's like, look, you sure you want to do this? I said, Andre, if I don't go there, I'm going to end up there, man. You know, I knew I did not have a lot of time left. I was out of control. So I got through Beaver, and I remember my first, you know, I get there, and I'm tired because, you know, my last hurrah was the Tremblant Blues Festival for 2 weeks. That was my last drink, was up at Mont Tremblant. And on the Sunday, the Monday, I came home packed. Tuesday, I was off to Beaver. And so I remember, you know, I want to grab a nap. I'm tired, right? And she said, no, you go down, have lunch. And I'm like, I'm not hungry. She says, there's no isolating here. So at that moment, I said, you know what? For my whole life, I've tried to break the rules. I'm going to try to listen to the rules for a change. I'm going to do it their way. My way is not working. These little moments of clarity, these little moments of surrendering, which to me was a sign of weakness, I realized today it's the best thing that I ever did. So we get down to the cafeteria, and I'll never forget walking in with my tray of food. And like, there's all noise and everything. All of a sudden I walk in, dead silence. I'm the newbie, right? Well, in my head, man, I had my tray like this, and in my head was out the door with little flames behind my feet, you know? But I knew I had to be there. So I sat down, and everyone right away, hey, what are you here for? What are you here for? It's like a big, you know, fucking, you know, I get out of my space. This is my box. Stay out of it, man, you know? I'm not like you guys. You're losers. I'm not. And I'm special. And so I remember at one point, too, I'm looking around at the therapist table, and of course I want one of the young women that are pretty that I can manipulate. I see this one guy stand up, tell everyone to shut up, Michelle Harvey, and I go, fuck, I hope I don't get him, man. He's a prick. Excuse my language. Anyway, who do I get? Michelle Harvey. So I realize now God gives you what you need. And my first meeting with Michelle blew me away because you got to remember all the times I was with Nazim and all these, I wasn't being honest. I was lying. You know, how often do you do drugs? Well, once a month, you know. How often do you drink? Well, weekends. You know, like everything was. So Michelle, I sit down and he looks at me, he goes, drugs and alcohol have become your mistress. Wow. How does he know that? You know. So right there, though, he got my trust that this guy, you know, and I knew at that moment he wasn't going to take my bullshit, you know. And I was ready to change. My life was pure hell. I wanted to get better. So I had signed up for 5 weeks. After 3 weeks, I was ready to leave. And actually, no, I got to back up quickly here. During that first meeting, because I went there thinking I had a cocaine problem. I didn't think alcohol was a problem. I convinced myself I don't drink alone, which is false. I convinced myself a lot of crazy things. And after that first hour with him, he told me, he goes, you know, you got to stop drinking and you got to do AA when you get out of here. I don't think so. You know, church basements with the freaks. I don't think so. And then he asked me, very simple. He asked me, he said, when do you do drugs? When I drink. When do you break the law? When I drink. When do I bring the wrong girl home? When I drink. I realized at that first hour, alcohol is the root of all my evil. So boy, did I mourn that, eh? I walk out of there going, holy shit, this is a new game now, man. You know, I got a wine collection at home. I got, you know, like, I'm not ready for this, you know. Anyway, so I get out. The scariest time and the happiest time because I was there, I was ready, I was a sponge, I worked hard. We opened that box of poison, very painful, but I'm glad most of it's done. I had 7 things on a list to go over with him. We got through all 7 of them, a lot quicker than I thought. And then all of a sudden it's like I'm back out in the world, man, 3 weeks and 2 days later. Very scared. Very scared. Now it's up to me and the tools I've been given. Then I walk into my first AA meeting, thank God, at Steps to Sobriety. I had a few friends that I knew from the old days that are, you know, saw the light 10, 12 years before me. And walk into my first AA meeting and all you happy, smiley, freaky people, hey, how you doing, how you doing, how you doing? And I was just miserable. I saw a buddy a couple of months ago and he says, when you first walked in here, it was like the judge gave you 20 years. And that's how I felt. I did not want to be here. It took 9 months before I started warming up to Alcoholics Anonymous. Where I got through that 9 months is because I did not want to drink anymore. I did not want to use anymore. I did not want to have that life. I was done with it. It had cost me so much. So for the first 9 months, I was a miserable SOB, ungrateful, hated everybody. I mean, I used to share in discussion groups, you know, nobody comes see me. Don't ask me how I'm doing. I'm in a church basement on a Friday. How do you think I'm doing? Look, I would tell them, this is my box. Stay the beep out of it. This is how I would share. And what would piss me off, they'd keep saying, keep coming back, yeah? You know, I want it to be barred, fuck, you know? Since then, I've gone around to make my amends to those groups, but... you know, and they say there's no rules in this program, and people are telling me you can't drink, you got to do 99, you get a sponsor, you can't have sex, you can't have a relationship, you can't... I'd be driving home going, thank God there's no rules, fuck, you know? You know? Happy guy. So anyway, so I fought every one of those rules, didn't want to sponsor, what, have someone tell me what to do? I don't think so. You know, somebody's going to tell me not to have a relationship. I wanted, anything I'm told not to do, my character is I'm going to go after it 10 times harder. I hear a lot of people share that we don't get the program gets us. That's what happened to me. Because I didn't want AA in my life at all. I didn't want any of you in my life. Slowly, though, I started seeing some positive changes. You know, little things. I joined the gym and actually kept going. I mean, my whole life, January, Nautilus, here I go, $500, let's go. By February, no time. You know, how many times did I join school? You know, I wanted to continue my education, do one semester, I'm done. You know, now I've done, I'm going back in September to McGill, I'm getting A's at McGill, I'm starting my 7th course, you know, in marketing. I started seeing consistency. I started seeing money at the end of the month in my pocket. So these little things started saying, well, maybe there's something about this program that's a good thing, you know. Then I got a sponsor, phenomenal guy. You know, to the newcomer, I'll just, you know, I don't want to bore everyone here. But what saved my ass in the beginning was calling before drinking. It's that simple, man. You know, it's a simple program that I'm really good at complicating. And if I had not... And it's an ego thing, you know, what, call someone and tell them you're hurting? Remember, I came from a background, I'm with the boys on a Friday night, we're not talking about fear, we're not talking about humility, we're not talking about God, we're talking about where we're going to destroy. So here I am in a fellowship where I got to discuss fears, humility, and then the God thing, the God thing. That was one of the big stumbling blocks for me in this program, it still is. Right now I'm not even that in touch with my higher power, I'm a little pissed at him right now. Because I don't have what I want. And I'm 2 years sober and I still get that way. You know, they tell me God says, he doesn't say no, he says not now. Well, sometimes my God's a little slow for my liking. You know? Good night. Thank you. Keep coming back. So anyway, so I fought the program, but little signs were starting to show that it was working. I got a sponsor. And like I said, I called, man, I used to scream at this guy. I used to scream at so many people in this program, F this and F that. And I'd be sitting outside strip bars. Because I had to change the whole lifestyle. I had to say goodbye to the boys. I had to say goodbye to the strip joints. My whole life, that's all I knew. You know, what, I'm going bowling on Saturday with a bunch of sober people? Fuck. Why didn't I die when I had the heart attacks? I used to think that in the beginning of this program. Bit by bit, the program got me. Then one day, somebody asked me to be a sponsor. Scared the hell out of me. You know, today I look at my life, I can still be an ungrateful, miserable, self-centered, selfish person. The difference is I try to change that the same day. When I was asked to share tonight, first thing was, fuck, no, I don't feel like it. Then I was, you know, going to make up a story. That's old behavior. But you know what? I didn't make up the story. I came. I did what I've been taught. I didn't know when I came into this program that Alcoholics Anonymous would show me how to be a better son. You know, I just got another card, second card from my mother, how proud she is, this and that. I never got cards from my mother telling me how proud she is and how I'm an example to the family, me. You know, I didn't know that I'd be a better employee. Now I've been made a partner at my firm, you know, a tiny percentage. Trust me, 2 years ago, there's no way I would have even been offered. I was losing my company car, so I was losing all my benefits. I remember sitting down and saying, okay, now I'm driving this. I was willing to lower my standards and just to make ends meet, you know. The people in this program, there's winners and losers as far as I'm concerned. There's people that work this program. There's people that talk this program. I work this program, and after going to the convention in Toronto, I want to get to the point in my sobriety where I live this program on a daily basis because it's natural. My sponsor has taught me that it's okay to think crazy things. Don't act on them. I still think some really crazy stuff, man. You know, for me it starts, you know, when I wake up feeling gratitude, as I should on a daily basis, because I have a fantastic life thanks to this program, my day works good, man. gratitude's on my left and humility's on my right. If I wake up right away focusing that, you know, that I don't have my kids. I mean, I approached my kids in January, because when I went to Beaver, I thought three things would happen. My career would take off, my kids would come running, and I'd meet the girl of my dreams. My career has taken off beyond my wildest dreams. I approached my kids. My daughter called me, basically told me, you know, in nicer words, but we're not interested, either one of us. But I'm telling you that not for pity, because you know what? I didn't drink over it. It was the most painful call I've ever received in my life. And I didn't drink over it. And meeting the girl of my dreams, not even close. So I'm pissed at my higher power right now. I was coming up to 2 years. I was back at Trauma for the Blues Festival, around couples the whole 2 weeks, and I was miserable. Instead of being grateful, I went into miserable mode. But I came back from Trauma deciding I'm going to do a lot more meetings. I'm doing 2 meetings a day again, just like I used to in the beginning. Because I want to be happy, joyous, and free. And I get that when I come to this program. When I stay in touch with the members, when I stop calling my sponsor and stop praying and stop going to meetings, it only takes a week and I'm a mess. And I know a drink's just around the corner if I stay in that mode, you know. Today I have a lot to be grateful for. You know, just a day like today, outside enjoying, hearing people laugh. You know, when I look at 20 years of Sundays that I was just a mess. You know, I'm almost done my steps. I'm done all the tough people in step 9. Now it's if I run into people, oh, can I talk to you for a sec? I'm finding I have to do that with everyone I run into, but... But you know what? It's okay, because I feel good, man. That trainer wreckage that I got, you know, a lot of it, it's a lot lighter. And, you know, do the steps, people. You know, I fought this program. I fought the higher power. I fought AA. And I stayed sober, I think, in the beginning, because I'm stubborn. I'm Irish. And I was sick of partying. I was not having fun anymore. I think that's what saved my ass in the beginning. I'm grateful I haven't slipped, because I feel with my character, if I would slip to start over and come back in here, no. I really felt when I went to Beaver, I got one crack at this. I know my character. And, you know, to the newcomer, get a good sponsor. Call before drinking, man. It's the only way I made it. For 6 months, I called someone every single day. I made myself a promise when I left Beaver that I would try calling somebody. If they couldn't talk me down, I was allowed to drink. That's the deal I made with myself. And they talked me down each time. Each time somebody talked me down. And that's why I'm here today. That's why I'm at 2 years. And that's why, you know, one day, you know, I want to be sober. If my kids do call, I don't want to be jacked up in a motel room. You know, I want to say, okay, I'm flying home from Chicago, or I'm flying home, you know. I have an honorary sponsor in Toronto. I have one in California. I mean, when at midnight Montreal time, the phone rang. It was all my friends from California calling. I didn't have that in the past, man. Nobody would call me for anything, you know. So I get pissed off at myself sometimes that I can still be so ungrateful, because I have a fantastic life. Consistency. I mean, I've done this 2 years straight. I never did anything more than a month straight, except why I manipulate and all the other stuff, you know. But, I mean, AA has saved my life. And, you know, I think it's, even though, like I mentioned, I didn't really feel like sharing, when I do share, it makes me realize how far I've come in this program. I still got a lot of work to do. You know, the other day I was at Nooners and Mick Elise was, you know, he just lost his job and this and that. And he's talking, he's there, you know what? My primary purpose is to help the other alcoholic. That's why I'm here. And I look at him and he goes, I'm going to get a job. It's in God's hand. I'm not there yet. I'm still selfish and self-centered. I'm working on him. But I hear a guy like that say that and it makes me realize, shit, I got a lot of work, man. I got a lot of work. You know, when I went to the convention in Toronto and these old-timers with 40 years sobriety crying with gratitude, I got 2 years and I'm pissing and moaning half the time. Stuff like that. But the difference is I see it now and I know what I got to work on. So, even though you didn't ask me to share, thank you. And I hope I help someone. To the newcomer, if I can do this program, and I complicated it for a long time, the only reason I made it, I don't want to sound like a broken record, is I called people. It's the only reason. And still today, it's funny, now that I'm at 2 years, my ego kicks in. I don't want to call my sponsor and talk about that. I should be over that. But you know what? Your sponsor's there forever, as long as you choose to have him in your life. And I got to be careful of that, because I still have a strong ego that I got to work on. My sponsor keeps telling me, you got to smash that ego. And it's not easy. And I sometimes wonder how I got this big ego, because I came in here with nothing left. But how did I have such a big ego? I had nothing left. Nothing left. But I have an ego. So I know my character defects. I know what they are. I'm working on them. And like someone with 30 years told me, they're never going to disappear. They're just going to get under control. They're going to get smaller. So it's an honor to be asked to share. I hope somebody here got something. And, you know, if you're hurting, call somebody, talk to somebody. Let it out. Let the poison out, man. Because if you keep the poison in, you're going to keep drinking. Cause versus effect. You know, I'm working on the cause now instead of the effect. And this program saved my ass. Thank you.
I truly believe that everything happens for a reason. And when I had asked the other member tonight to call around and see if she could find someone for me, she called me back and said, give me 5 minutes. I've spoken with someone. He's not sure if he can do it. And I knew it was you. I'm serious. I told her that when she called back. She said, it's Jeff. And I said, yeah, I knew it was. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. I'm so glad that you didn't make up a story and that baseball wasn't more important. And I really appreciate that you were so open and honest with us, because it shows that no matter how far your life has spun out of control, surrendering and giving yourself to this program can really change everything around. And albeit slow at times, but it works. It really does. I've asked Brent to thank you tonight on behalf of the group, and I also encourage all of you to thank Jeff on your own time.
My name is Brent. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have to thank you. Gilly just did a really good job. Okay, well, you started out with the important place AA has taken in your life, which really meant a lot to me. I like that very much. And how you've changed. You gave us the situation that happened recently, how AA has made you change your behavior and your thinking, which I relate to as well. The same thing happened for me. You brought us to the insanity drugs and alcohol brought you to, and then still some of the things you battle with in AA. Now that you're sober a couple of years, you're starting to get a handle on your defects. You're getting to know yourself, armed with the facts about ourselves, as it says in the book, a very powerful thing. And ego is still a big thing, and I battle with that myself too. And just on behalf of myself and the group, thanks so much, Jeff.
I've asked Cole to present the desire chip.
My name's Cole. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey, Cole.
Thanks, Jeff. You know, if this program, you know, this teaches us anything, you know, you never really know when somebody comes up and, you know, says your story for me, rang true with a lot of it, Bieber and everything like that. This desire chip is, you know, about the desire to stop drinking, but it's also a desire for change. And what Jeff was saying, change is, I think, the big part. I think alcohol and drugs are just, you know, what we use to mask other problems that we have, and we want to change those problems and change our lives. And I think that's what this program does for me, anyway. And I think this desire chip is when I got it, and I was in Bieber as well, and I took it in Bieber, and I was the same. It was like these bunch of guys down in the basement. They're a bunch of freaks. And fact is that you know, I found out after taking this that I was one of those freaks, and it's humility, and you come out of it after taking it. Humble in a lot of ways, and it puts you on a path to change. And if you do want to change, this is a good start in taking that change. And I invite anybody to come up from a slip or who'd like to stop drinking. But not, it's here if you like it.
Thank you, Cole. Now for the seventh tradition. AA does not accept any contributions, financial or otherwise, from any outside interest. AA members contribute voluntarily to meet the group expenses, such as rent, refreshments, literature, and to ensure that their group contributes to AA services.
Thank you.
sentences in one.
Thanks, Dan.
Mel?
I'd like to thank everyone for their participation tonight and help making this meeting a success. Alex for reading how it works. Perry for the 12 steps. Jeff, a wonderful share. Thank you. Brent for thanking Jeff. And Cole for presenting the desireship. For those of you who wish to do so, please help me close the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Nice job, Billy. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks
so
for
much.
Meeting.
Thank you, Greg. Nice to meet you guys. Come back, visit us. Oh.